Hi, I'm running a non-alcoholic speakeasy under the diner that I own, and I'm Allison.
And I'm sneaking into my dad's drug lab to get pictures to blackmail him with. I'm Evan.
And we are Cheryl's bitches, and we are both Veronica.
Yes, we are.
We're here to discuss chapter 38, As Above, So Below. This episode, it was like, I feel like we said, this third episode of season three. I feel like both the prior episodes were like, I can't believe all this is happening so early. But at this point, I'm like, it makes sense because there is so much to go with
Oh yeah.
all of these plot lines. But the realism of this episode, like, not that, you know, Riverdale is a realism type show, but some of the choices that the characters made in this episode, I was like, they wouldn't even do that. You know, like, it was like, even for the craziest characters, some of the decisions were like out of pocket.
It was. It felt like, so this episode, I don't know what it, I just, it felt like there was a change in the writer's room. That's really what it felt like. I was watching this and I was like, this is a very different creative vision than we have seen on Riverdale at, to like up to this point. And I have no proof of that. It's just what it felt like while I was watching it. It was like, even the dialogue was very different from like normal Riverdale dialogue.
Minimal quotes, and
Yeah, there weren't a whole lot of great quotes.
there was lots of crazy instances where there could have been like witty quotes, but it just felt like there wasn't. I definitely didn't like remember this episode specifically, so I feel like this might just be a flop episode. And it wasn't even like a flop. Like, some there were some good moments, not gonna lie.
There were like
But
a lot of individually good moments, but as a whole, the episode did just feel kind of like, okay, blasé. You know what I mean?
You want to know my theory of why season three, and I'm not going to claim it still is, but just historically, season three, I've said, is my least favorite season. I think it's because all of like the characters are separated. It's like
That's
they're
true.
doing different shit. Like, at least last season, it was like Betty and Jughead and Veronica and Archie. Now it's like Betty and Jughead, but also Betty has a separate thing with the farm. Veronica's fully on her own island, like doing speakeasy shit with Reggie, and then Archie is in prison.
Yeah, it's the characters have their own little plot silos a lot more now than they would like jump in and out of each other's stories in the past in a way that they didn't, especially this episode, did not do.
Yeah, so we start, speaking of Archie, we start with Archie in solitary confinement. And he, like, a guard comes in and he says the answer is still no. Because if we remember, Mad Dog told him, like, not to trust the guards or whatever. So he's doing it because, like, Mad Dog said. But also, what is happening? He doesn't even know what's happening.
I don't know. Well, didn't the at the end of the last episode, didn't the warden be like, I need you to be my new mad dog? And then Archie
Yes.
was like, no. And I think it was because Mad Dog was like, you don't want to be me.
Yeah. But it's like Archie still has no evidence and he's just like, no. And he's in solitary confinement for who knows how long at this point.
We'll find out. It gets
Yeah.
said.
But he's going through it.
Anyways, then Alice and FP are in bed together.
Which was
Which, can I say they
my favorite.
both look so good?
I remember Alice was glowing. I guess FP did not stand out.
I mean, FP, she looks better than him, if we're being honest. But like, I was just like, wow. They are both hot for parents. Anyways, they're both like, well, the town seems to have moved on from Dalton and Ben's deaths, but with Betty and Jughead like having suspicions, who knows what's going to happen? We should keep an eye on that. Which is then funny because in a fun little like juxtaposition moment, Jughead and Betty are cuddling in the bunker.
Sorry, pause. You like this is like, I think there's not technically anything wrong with it, right? It's like they're it's two It's not even consenting adults because that's their children.
Yeah, they're
One
not
of the
adults.
couples is children, but like, okay, whatever. It's like I get they're not related and like nothing, but it's just so weird to be like these two parents just hooked up and their children also just hooked up. Like, why is that the parallel?
It is. It's the parallel. I think it's the fact that makes it even weirder is the fact that they do have a half sibling, like that they both share, because their parents had a kid. Like, I think that makes it weirder than just the normal situation that it already is.
Already be weird because it's like
I mean, it would already be
realistically,
weird,
like if
but
this was
it's made even weirder in that, like, they are kind of already a blended family.
siblings, step siblings.
Anyways. So they're cuddling in the bunker, in Dilton's bunker. And they're just like, yeah, my parents are acting weird. They're being extra vigilant of us. And Betty's like, isn't it super weird that Ben just like died? She's just like, isn't it weird that he killed himself?
Is weird, so true.
I was like, I don't understand. She was like going on about how it was so weird that he didn't even scream. And I was like, that would be weird if he was killed, but he killed himself. Like,
Yeah, I
I
don't
don't know
know.
what she was getting at.
He was at peace. I don't know. They're like comparing it to a cult and being like, maybe it's like a cult. And then, of course, Betty is like, every cult has a king, like Edgar Everett. Because this bitch will not give it a break.
She is obsessed.
Yeah,
Obsessed.
and after this episode, it makes sense, but at this point, I'm kind of just like, okay, Betty.
I like get it, because if my parents were like joining a weird cult, I'd be like against it too.
Yeah, but I'd be like, I would let them. I guess if I still like live at home,
Yeah.
I'm thinking of now. I guess maybe if I have to deal with them on a daily basis, I would want to fight it. Now I'd be like, best of luck to
Have fun.
you.
Emily.
Then we see Fred is at the juvie and he's talking to the warden, and the warden says that he still can't visit because Archie started the riot. And Fred's like, well, I have eyewitnesses that say otherwise, and you'll be hearing from my lawyer.
Yeah, and in this conversation, we learned that it has been 3 weeks since the riot and Archie's solitary confinement. So, 3 weeks of solitary confinement for Archie.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. Anyways, Veronica talks to Betty at Pops and is complaining about how Pops is in kind of bad financial shape. And Betty's like, well, you know, when the speakeasy opens, it'll fix it. Like, how long or what, like, how far along are we on that? And Veronica's like, well, it's ready, but I don't want to open it without Archie.
I love this conversation because it's just a good reminder that the reason that Hiram bought Pops in the first place is because it was going to have to close because it's not doing well. Like,
Yeah.
it's not a good, it's not succeeding as a business. So, like, of course, Veronica, like, trading to get Pops, which isn't even successful. I'm like, queen of business, slay.
She doesn't even
But
need to
maybe
go
the
to school.
speak.
Just give her an MBA already.
Maybe the speakeasy that can't sell alcohol will save the business.
Maybe it will. Anyways, Betty's like, don't, that's stupid. Archie wouldn't want that. And Veronica's like, yeah, I guess you're right. So the speakeasy is gonna open. Yay.
Yay! The biggest slay of this episode. Then we see Betty and Jughead. Betty mentions that there's going to be a strict dress code at the speakeasy, seemingly ordering Jughead to get some nicer clothes, which I thought was funny. But they're actually looking at, like across the hallway, Ethel is talking to Evelyn Ever Never, at the lockers, and Betty has a theory that it could all be connected. Which I'm like, didn't you already say this theory yesterday? But okay. She's like, the cult, could, the farm could be connected to the game, and they're going to investigate. Of course.
They are. They were like, let's talk to Ethel. Even the last time we interrogated her, she had a seizure and it might have been our fault, but like this time we'll just do it differently. Which was really funny. They like acknowledged that in the conversation. That wasn't just me projecting. I need everyone to know that.
I like that too. They're like, well, it's Ethel. Do we really care?
Do we care if we give her another seizure and she potentially dies? Not really. Anyways, then Josie and Kevin arrive at Pop's, and Pop Tate like tells them how to get into the speakeasy, and Reggie's the doorman, and so they go down and they talk to Veronica. Veronica
Wait,
tells them
pause.
that she's naming the speakeasy La Bonne Nuit.
Before this, when they go in the phone booth to like get down to
Oh,
the
yeah.
speakeasy and ask her a password, what does Kevin say? Of course, he doesn't know the password yet. This is like the first time anyone's in the speakeasy. He says, Stonewall.
It was so funny.
Was on the floor.
I was too. Kevin threw the first brick, if we're being honest here.
Oh my gosh. Kevin got
And
a brick thrown at.
I
No,
was
Kevin
like, Kevin threw
was
the
the first
first
one
brick,
that.
and he was the cop throwing, like, getting the brick thrown at him too. He was doing both. It was double duty.
Kevin was like the first one shot at
Yes.
Stonewall. Like before.
No one died at Stonewall except for Kevin Keller. Veronica tells them, quote, I've hired some serpents from the White Worm to serve drinks. Mocktails only. La Bonne Nuit is not in the business of corrupting minors.
Okay.
Okay. I like how they're like, they cannot pick a side on whether or not these kids do drugs and alcohol. Like, they're just like, casually, Veronica will be drinking like scotch with her dad, but then in the next scene, she'll be like, how dare they be doing Jingle Jangle? That's so like crazy.
I think in this instance, she was like putting on a bit of an act to be like, don't spread that, you know, like she doesn't
Yeah.
want it like hurting the business, but it is just funny that like with what happens later and Reggie's
Yeah.
character, it's
It's
yeah,
just very
they don't
funny.
have a lane. But anyway, she wants Josie to have a residency at Le Bon Nuit. I'm like, okay, this was like so forward thinking. Like this
It
was before
was.
like the Adele residency, like before all these residencies that are happening in Vegas now. So anyway, Veronica Lodge started that trend, and she wants Kevin to be the MC. And he says yes, if he can occasionally perform.
Yeah, and she
Sure.
agrees. Veronica then has to go upstairs because who has arrived at Pops but Penny Peabody, who's like, give me money and the ghoulies won't wreck your shit. So Veronica is being extorted like a little bit. She's like, well, she refuses, but they're trying to extort Veronica.
I guess I don't know what happens that much in small town communities that have lots of gang violence. I wonder why I don't know that. I wonder why I don't know that, but I don't. And so I don't understand, because like this is like the 87th instance we've had like group A going to group B and being like, we're just gonna destroy your whole thing if you don't give us money or give us something in return. And then like I guess that's how gangs work, but at the same time it's like I guess she can't, I mean she can't call the cops, but also they can't just destroy her stuff. That's illegal. Like does she have insurance? Like I feel like she has a defense other than just like I don't know, they would destroy everything.
I mean, I guess the idea is like if they go around, even if she has insurance, which questionable because it's Riverdale and she's 16. no one's multiple businesses. But like I guess even if they do have insurance, the like ghoulies showing up to destroy things would be bad for business at an already struggling business.
I mean, probably.
But I don't know.
So, yeah, Veronica is in a predicament. Then we see at the juvie. I don't even mean to laugh, but some of this stuff, I'm just like,
Well, it's just the whole Archie's entire plot line for like the entire season is just so ridiculous.
Like they could have made this somewhat a real thing. I don't get why. Okay, we haven't even got there. Let's wait.
Let's just get
Anyway,
there.
we see a prison guard come in, place a burlap sack over Archie's head, drag him out to undisclosed location. What does he see? He sees in the bottom of a swimming pool that's empty of water. Okay, you have to follow me. You have to stay with me on this one. Empty swimming pool. It's grimy. Where is this? We never find
Who
out.
knows? Who knows?
And Joaquin is getting beat up by a guy, and there's a bunch of people and prison guards around cheering it on. It is a fight club, and the warden says, Archie, you can end this. Like, Joaquin's not doing well in the fight. And he says, Archie, you can end it if you take his place. Archie says, I'll do it. One, that's not what happens at all. Like, Joaquin is still in this fight club, so he didn't take his place.
Yeah, I like didn't fully understand. My thing is we'll get there. Never mind.
I also don't understand, like, why you need Archie to agree to this. Like, just put him in the bottom of the swimming pool, and if a guy beat him up, like, he'll have to fight back, right? Like,
I mean, he's Archie, so yeah.
or, like, I guess just get beat up. I don't know. Anyway, it's a fight club. That's the whole thing. It's a prison fight club. Look, there's an episode of Criminal Minds where this is actually the plot. It's like people start dying in prison, and then they go into, or just this one prison, and they go in to investigate. And they actually made it seem like it would be somewhat realistic. What is so unrealistic about this plot line is the ones that are in the fight club, like the prisoners that are in a fight club, are completely removed from all the other prisoners. They're not allowed to visit any of their family. They're not, like, they're just living a completely different life. I'm like, that's what makes it unrealistic because, like, Fred said, like, I'm gonna go to my lawyer. Like, even
No.
prisoners have rights. And if you have one concerned relative, go to the authorities. Like, you'll at least have to, like, prove that Archie is alive. And if they prove that, they'll see him getting beat up in a swimming pool.
It doesn't make sense for numerous reasons, in my opinion. It also it extra doesn't make sense that they're doing this at a juvie. Because, like.
Dude, I was gonna say that because it's like this is so immoral. Like, make incarcerated people fight for your entertainment. Like, it's already, you think that's the most fucked up thing a person could come up with? And then they're like, let's do it at the juvie.
Which children? With children.
In this juvie, there's a bunch of like buff guys. And you have to imagine at an adult prison, there's probably more buff guys than there are at the average juvie. Like, lots
Well,
of
it's also
people in
because this
juvie.
juvie is populated by 27-year-olds, but like.
Right? I'm like, would you actually want to see like two 15-year-olds fight? Like, just go to the local high school.
No, for real. You can see it on Twitter. Just pull up best like that one fight account. I don't remember what it's called. But there was a fight from my high school that ended up on it. Huh?
I had no idea there's a fight account.
Yeah, there was some account on Twitter that would post like videos of fights, and like a lot of them were high school fights because like where else do people get in physical fights that often? Like not that common. Anyways, there's a girl at my high school who I don't know if it was her real name or not, but everyone called her Bubbles. And a video of her just beating the shit out of another girl went viral.
Oh my gosh. Okay, shout out to Bubbles. You're who I'm placing. Look, if I was a prison guard betting on a juvie fight,
No, I would bet on
you would have
Bubbles.
my money. Okay, that's all of our comments on the fight club for now. I'm sure there's
For
gonna
now.
be
I have
many.
more later.
So we get a little more context of
So
there's a
yeah.
bunch of dudes like in a courtyard training. And we meet Baby Teeth, which I
Baby
was so
teeth.
excited for, because he's like a celebrity to me, Baby Teeth. It's just another guy in juvie that's called Baby Teeth for some fucking reason. And he explains the situation as like the warden sets up all these fights, the guards all bet on it, and Archie's like, "What happened to Mad Dog?" But Baby Teeth won't tell him for no reason.
He's just like, it's best not to ask questions. And you're like, okay. So this brings up one of my questions. They're like, is a team that this warden has put together to be like his boxing team. But Archie does not appear to be fighting other people on this team. So are they like trucking in outside, like people from. People from other juvies to like fight their team? Like, I'm so confused about the logistics.
It's a good point because it's like we see Archie fight a dude later. I'm like, was he there? Like, who is this guy? It just, I mean, none of it makes sense. So I feel like they just chose not to write that. But it's
Yeah.
like, but I feel like later in this storyline, like Archie does have to fight some of his like fight club friends. So he's like conflicted about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, very, very strong tonal shift. Veronica's talking to Cheryl and Tony in the student lounge. She walks up and says, these are just the ladies she's looking for. She's President Blossom, First Lady Topaz. I need your help spreading the good word about my speakeasy. First Lady Topaz like took me out. I don't know why, but I was on the floor.
That was good. No, this whole thing of like Veronica sucking up to like the hot lesbians for clout, I was like, this is how high schools, like, this is not a true high school dynamic in any high school in the entire country, but it's a nice thought.
Anyways, yeah, that's fair. Anyways, Veronica offers them no cover and free drinks on the first night in exchange for this, and they agree. And then she's like, you can invite whoever, but definitely invite Sweet Pea and Bangs, which I was like, oh, foreshadowing. That's gonna be important. They're gonna do something later. Sweet Pea and Bangs are not in this episode.
Oh. No, because I was like, Sweet Pea and Bangs, like, what is this plot line? Like, is she, and but Reggie is like her servant,
Yeah.
so it's like, who are Sweet Pea and Bangs? Have nothing to do with this. I was confused by that too, and yeah, they're not even in the episode.
No, I was like, they're gonna come, they're gonna do something. No. It's
No,
just thrown in there for no reason.
sure. Then in a frankly iconic scene,
No, yeah,
nothing
fully.
happens in this scene, but like it was so entertaining. Ethel is eating alone in the science lab, which, okay. Betty and Jughead walk in the room, ask her how she's doing. She says that she's had seizures before, so it wasn't like they just caused her to have a seizure, like that's just something she's dealing with right now. And she also says that Evelyn has been helping her out. What has she been helping her with? Getting off her meds. Which, not advisable to, one, get off meds you need. Two, have a child help you go through the process of waning medication. Maybe do that with a credentialed doctor.
Yeah, don't take medical advice from your classmate unless you're no, because even if you're in medical school, just like ask a professor.
Yeah, or you should still go to a
Go
doctor.
to a
I'm sorry.
doctor.
Also, they are starting a peer support group, which is just the farm for kids, basically. And then they get to the topic of griffins and gargoyles. And Jughead is like fixated on like if they have the rule book, like he wants the rule book for whatever fucking reason. Again, like, what do Betty What do Betty and Veronica, what do Betty and Jughead have anything to do with this? They have nothing to do with it. And usually, at least when they're investigating shit, it has like something to do with them. This, they literally just took this on. It's been resolved and they revive it again this episode. It's their fault that all of this happens, but like, whatever. They're still
Yeah, it
asking
really
questions
is.
about it. Jughead wants the rules. Ethel says, oh, the scripture. And Jughead, I loved this moment. Jughead decides to flirt his way into getting the scripture, which I was like, clever. Like, I was like, okay, Jughead, like, okay. Definitely not an approach he probably uses often, but it did work. He's like, please, Princess Etheline. And he says it like in this way that I'm like, okay, damn, your girlfriend's right in front of you,
I
but
know.
she does kind of shut him down and is like, don't call me that, you're not worthy, but like, meet me in the bunker, just you, not Betty, she'll never be worthy.
She says, just you. Sorry, Betty. You'll never be worthy, no matter how hard you try.
It felt homophobic.
It is homophobic. It was literally homophobia.
Possibly mean, and like you'll never be worthy. Not of the scripture.
It's like that was homophobic. Anyways, so then Betty and Jughead are like, cool, let's split up. Jughead, you go do your thing with Ethel, and I will go. Betty's like, I'll go do my thing with Evelyn and go to the peer support group. So now Reggie unloads boxes at the speakeasy while shirtless. It's important to know he's shirtless because of course he is.
Of course, he's shirtless.
So many shirtless men in this episode. Veronica opens the boxes and they're just full of jingle jangle, just like absolutely stacked. And of course, who s arrives as soon as they open these boxes? Sheriff Minetta. He's here to do an inspection. He's decided he needs to inspect them. And Veronica's like, I've already had all of my inspections. And he's like, well, I didn't do mine. And I was like, and that's when you say, and it's not legally required. Goodbye, sir. You need a search warrant. Get the fuck out. Bye.
She does immediately give in when she told, like, she told Reggie, like, hide it, I'll stall. She didn't stall him
No.
for more than 2 seconds.
She was like, Reggie, you better have gotten rid of that in 0.5 seconds because it was literally that sentence. It was just, I have an inspection, and Betty goes, okay.
Also, don't worry, we never find out what Reggie did with the jingle jangle. It's just like, okay. But Sheriff Minetta goes downstairs, is like snooping around, doesn't find anything,
He's
and he
also doing
also.
the worst Snoop job. He looks at a table with some boxes on it, and then it's just like, guess there's nothing illegal here. And I'm like, you're not even gonna check behind the bar?
Look, I don't know, because he actually came to threaten them, I guess, but I thought it
Yeah.
was a plant. I'm confused on what happened, because it's like,
So
okay.
I'm like so confused on what just so because
All
then
this, yeah, so it all goes back to Hiram, right? So I don't know if it's Penny or Hiram or whoever. Someone drops off Jingle Jangle. Reggie is dumb, so he doesn't check the boxes and just brings it downstairs. Okay. Then Sheriff Minetta shows up at exactly right the same time. So clearly it's an orchestrated plan of like Penny is like, I'll drop off the Jingle Jangle. As soon as they bring it inside, you go do your inspection. But then Sheriff Minetta doesn't actually inspect anything and is just like says I'm also collecting donations, which it's like what is the plan here? Like, are you trying to like steal money for them, or are you trying to like catch them do some that doing something that's illegal to shut them down?
Yeah, that's what I was very confused about. That's what I was like, just so. I don't know. Anyway, so he's like,
Oh, is
I'm.
it wait? Is it actually clever? And they're illustrating the fact that although all these people work for Hiram, they're all doing their own thing. It's not like Penny and Sheriff Minetta are friends. They
Yeah.
don't like each other either, but they're on the same side, but they're just both doing like these separate schemes that it doesn't all come together.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I just think it wasn't that thought out. And so he's like, I'll collect my donation from you after your opening event. And then so this is when Veronica then theorizes, like we did, that she was like, well, they both work for my dad, so it was obviously a trap where Penny was dropping off the jingle jangle and then Minetta was coming to catch me with it, which doesn't make sense because what?
He's a catcher.
He
Like,
didn't
why would
catch
he have
you.
looked harder?
Yeah. So it was like, I maybe the idea was that he'd catch them with it and be like, pay me or I'll arrest you. I guess that's the
But
only
he
thing I can
knows.
think of that makes it sense, but that doesn't even like really work.
Yeah, because he knows they don't have money yet. That's why he's like, I'll come back after. Like, they haven't even opened.
Yeah. Anyways,
It's. Yeah, whatever.
while very confusing, Veronica is kind of in a sleigh outfit. Because she's wearing the world's ugliest polo. It's this like yellow polo with like a kind of like flowy white trimmed collar with black buttons, and it just like it's very 70s, which all of the outfits in this episode were very 70s, and I don't know why. It looked
They were
like they
going for
raided the
something.
Carrie the Musical costume bin.
They probably did. Reuse.
Anyways, but so that was happening. And Veronica says that she won't be had by her dad, but until she's properly armed.
So then we see Betty is at the farm, but the farm is just a empty classroom because no one showed up for Evelyn's peer support group. But then Evelyn walks in and she immediately starts interrogating Betty about her seizure and says she needs to get off her meds. Which I was like, that's an approach, I guess.
She's
The
like,
ambush.
don't go on meds. You're not on meds, right? It was like so weird.
Yeah, and then Betty's like, well, I am considering it because, like, she just wants more information. And she's like, I'm hoping your dad could maybe help me. So that's Betty's in. Okay.
Yeah.
Then we see Archie.
Well, Betty and Evelyn are also serving in very 70s-esque fits. So Betty has overalls and a red, white, and blue, like, striped top under it. And Evelyn is wearing this, like, green and orange geometrically patterned dress, but it's, like, a low square cut. So then she has a white top underneath and then a pink scarf tied around her neck. Again, very 70s looks, but they were serving.
I like the scarf
The
on
scarf was really
Evelyn.
cool. I liked the scarf.
Kind of a sleigh.
It was very slow.
Then back in prison, Archie is at the bottom of the Fight Club swimming pool. There is another child across the mat that he has to fight. And Archie, of course, best boxer of all time, Archie Andrews, knocks him out in two swings. And Archie's like, oh, I ate. But then it like pans to the warden and he does not seem impressed. Seems like Archie is too dumb to figure out the point of a fight club.
Yeah. Anyways, but then because Archie won, he's allowed like gifts because that's the rule. So he gets to request lunch and he asks for pops, which he then just immediately shares with the entire yard, which I was like, I don't think that's the rules, but whatever. And then Baby Teeth is like, Archie, you won too quick. And Archie's like, what do you mean? And then just our baby teeth won't explain.
Yeah,
Again.
I don't get why it's like elusive. Like, why, if you're literally kidnapped this guy and making him do a fight club, at least explain like what you want out of him. Like,
I mean, like, should Archie know? Probably yes. Like, it's not that complicated of a like understand, like, oh, this was too short. But he's stupid, so this is where we're at. Just
and he
explain it to
can't
him.
be the first stupid teenage boy boxer they've like
No,
put in this
he
fight
can't.
club.
Anyways, then Veronica visits Cheryl and Tony at the Serpent Camp, and she asks if they've seen Jughead, and Cheryl responds, "You mean True Detective? He's busy canoodling Nancy Drew, no doubt. But how can we help?"
When she walks up to them, Tony is taking pictures of Cheryl, and Cheryl's just like doing these poses, and Tony's like taking pictures, and it was so clear their direction was just like be cute, like you guys are hanging out, and they nailed it. Shout out to them. That was actually really cute. Like, just it was just a random intro for the scene, but
It
really
was.
set the scene of what their relationship probably looks like on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Also, I think they were on like the Serpent Throne, which I think is technically Jughead's. So, like, very in character for them to just be like, "It's mine." Anyways, Veronica is like, "So here's the tea on what's going on at my place of business, and I need blackmail on my dad so that he'll stop trying to blackmail me." Or like extort me. And then so Tony's like, "Well, you know what? We keep tabs on the ghoulies," and they turned the basement of the White Worm into a jingle jingle lab. And luckily I used to work there, so I can get you in.
Perfect solution, just an instant solution. I was just like, sure.
Was a problem and it was solved in one scene.
And then they go to the drug lab and they take pictures of it.
Yeah.
Sure.
And Jingle Jangle by the Archies is playing over the scene, which I think is a fun like nod to Riverdale past.
So true.
And
Oh,
also I
it
just
was
love like
fun.
a Archies song because it's so aggressively 60s.
It was catchy. Then we see Jughead is in the bunker and he's meeting Ethel, and there's candles set up everywhere, which seems extremely dangerous, especially in a bunker. I was like worried about them.
I'm like, where's the ventilation?
It's breathing in so much smoke. They start to play, and Jughead has to choose his character. He chooses to be the Hellcaster, of course. And Ethel is like so cute. She's wearing like this little crown and like has a little kind of cape thing. It was kind of a play, actually.
Yeah, it was. She noticed that Ben was the Hellcaster before, so some parallels, I guess. She also makes a comment about how they were, her and Ben were supposed to ascend together, but he betrayed her and finished his game with Dilton instead. And then,
Yay.
yeah, so she was betrayed, but then Jughead starts the game. So that's where they're gonna play. Then Betty gets home, and there's a large group of women in their family room, and she's like, "What's going on?" And apparently, Evelyn told the farm that Betty told her she was ready to join the farm. So they're here to help her do that by having her first testimony, which is, according to Evelyn, an open and non-judgmental conversation about all of the things you've done in your bad, or all of the bad things you've done in your life, which feels judgmental.
Yeah, I like this is a cult specifically for people that have done a lot of fucked up shit. Like,
I mean, so it's like basically the Catholic Church in that aspect. It's all about making yourself feel guilty.
yes, but it's definitely the act of confession that we see here is definitely different. Like, you don't just go around telling, see. In
Telling
Catholicism,
everyone.
you tell one dude every wrong thing you've ever done. This is like you have to tell the entire group everything you've ever done, which kind of diminishes the power that the like cult leaders have, right? Like, is it more powerful if just they know the secrets?
Yeah, one would think so. 'Cause then like you can blackmail people to like
Well,
keep them in the cult.
don't you worry. They have plenty of blackmail
Oh no,
material
they'll get there.
because it is revealed that,
Oh.
Alice told them about
Well,
the sh what?
before this, Betty is immediately like, "Oh, I'm joining the farm. Where's Edgar? Can I talk to Edgar?" And they're all like, "No, you dumb bitch. You're just joining."
Okay, is Season two of Riverdale. Archie obsessed with Hiram Lodge. Is this just Betty obsessed with Edgar Ever and Ever?
I guess it's not as fun though because it doesn't have like the homoerotic undertones because Edgar is not obsessed with her.
Yeah. Aw. That is sad. Poor Betty.
Which is sad.
That's clearly the main issue going on here.
Anyways, so yeah, then they do reveal that the farm knows all of Betty's dirty laundry already, so like there's no point. They know about, she says they know about her like weird relationship with her dad, the serial killer, how she helped hide a dead body when her fake stepbrother murdered someone in their kitchen. How she wears a cabaret wig to have sex with Jughead.
Okay, Evelyn says, we know, whatever, we know it all. The wig, the webcam-ish.
Webcamming.
When did Alice find out about the webcamming? From Chick?
I guess. That's why I was like, who told them about the webcamming? Everything else I got.
Yeah. Lot going on.
Anyways.
But they're like, don't worry, everything is in confidence. Like, we would never tell anyone this. And then Betty kind of starts making wild accusations,
Yeah.
and it's just not a good, like, there's so many valid rebuttals to this situation, but she's just kind of like throwing things out and seeing what sticks. And they also have heard about griffins and gargoyles from Alice, and Evelyn's like, this is about you, Betty, not your mother's past, which I'm like, Evelyn accidentally like revealing vital information. This is just, it's all a mess. And also, I love that she's like, we would never, it's all in confidence. We would never tell anyone this. And then she's like, and your mother's past is all about, gosh. And then Betty almost passes out again, but
Yeah,
that's it.
I did think it was really funny that so one of her wild accusations is that the farm is connected to Griffins and Gargoyles. And Betty says, it's a game, Mom. It's called Griffins and Gargoyles that made Ben and Dilton kill themselves, all to appease some creature called the Gargoyle King, for who, for all we know, is Edgar Evernever. And I was like, so much flying around.
No evidence of that.
Like,
Literally.
low key, Edgar's catching stray bullets here.
And she, like, this whole episode was set up as like Jughead is investigating Griffins and Gargoyles, and Betty's investigating the farm, and she totally just like reveals both of their hands with this and gets nothing out of it. Like, there's nothing
Yeah.
to gain in this situation. She's a mess.
Betty's kind of in her flop era, and it's like sad. Clearly, just needs to go to therapy.
Speaking of flop situations, we're back in the bunker.
We are.
This pissed me off so much. Okay, we're in the bunker. They already get to. Already. They've been playing just today. So at
An hour.
most a couple hours. And they have already gotten to the two chalices. We know the situation. Jughead has to flip a coin for what chalice to drink. And he's like, if you like promise you'll give me the scripture after, then I'll do it. Ethel says yes. He drinks one of the chalices.
He's
Why?
like so stupid. Like so stupid.
Not like condoning violence, but Ethel is across the table from you. You have so much leverage on her life. Why can't you just be like, I'm gonna go tell everyone something to get the scripture? Like, he's literally risking his life. And again, they have no connection to this story. Like, they have, the most you could say is like Dilton went to Jughead and asked him for help in the first episode, and he didn't help, and then he died. So maybe he feels guilty. It is so out of character for even Jughead to have a 50% chance of dying just to get the rules safe.
It's just, did they Google Like, I don't think there's any moment where they Googled. Is the world's online? It's not unclear to me that they're not online. I just.
I get they don't know anything about the origins of this
Yeah.
game, and they don't, but that just emphasizes the fact that at this point, like we
Why
saw,
would you risk death?
yes, and we saw Allison FP earlier in this episode being like, everything's kind of settled down for the past 3 weeks. Nothing has happened. There's no stakes to this. It's not like Betty's gonna die if you don't get the
Yeah.
scripture. It's like literally he's just curious.
And like, no, for real. And then also, we clearly see they can get into this bunker. So they can come back later and search the bunker. If they can't find it, you know where there probably is one? Ethel's house. Break into Ethel's house. Like, honestly, there's so many ways you can do this without having a 50-50 chance of drinking cyanide.
It's, of
It's
course
so
he
dumb.
does it, and of course he's fine, but it's just so stupid. I'm like, well, you could have written this scene so many different ways. I just don't understand what they're doing here. I do like to get the scripture. Ethel's like, you have to kiss me first. It says in the rules. I'm like, sure it does. The rules that he's not allowed to read yet.
Listen, she's desperate. She's sad. Which is further emphasized by the fact that as soon as she gives it to him, the rules, he starts reading it and she drinks the poisoned cup. Which is just. Oh my God.
He wants to ascend. I don't at this point. We still don't understand. Like, is this actually like, is there an actual, like, some sort of griffin king that is manipulating all of these kids? Or is it just like a group delusion? We don't really know. But either way, I feel like I'm just confused by these actions. Like, what? How did Ethel get to this place? We just need more background on the whole situation. But then Jughead is freaking out and
Yeah.
like drags Ethel to the hospital.
Yeah. So then Ethel wakes up in the hospital with Jughead by her side, and he explains what happened, and she's restrained because she's on suicide watch because she drank an entire cup of poison. And Jughead's like, "You need to tell your parents the truth. The game's over now." And she says that he's gonna spread the gospel just like she told the Gargoyle King he would. And then she thanks him for helping her finish her game.
Sure.
Which, okay.
Whatever that means. Then we see Veronica is talking to her dad in his study, and she says that she's not going to pay for any protection, not from him, and shows pictures of his whole drug lab as blackmail. And he's like, I own Sheriff Mineta. Who would you show that to? And she's like, I'll go to the FBI, which.
Which, like,
Duh, but it's also kind of
respectfully, Hiram, of course she would. Like,
like,
what?
yeah, he's like he thinks he's so clever of like, I own Sheriff Mineta. Like, obviously there's other cops in the world. Like, I don't understand, but okay. And she's like, and you're gonna give me 10 grand every week,
Wait.
which she ate.
She
This
did
was
eat here.
certified Veronica Slay moment.
I feel like we talked a lot in season one and two about how Veronica is often flopping, but I feel like season three is really where she starts to not flop so much, which is exciting for me personally.
Yes.
She starts
I
to
think
get some like actual wins under her belt in this season, which is exciting.
when she's straight up against Hiram for real, she
Yeah.
does a lot better.
She does. Then the warden is talking to Archie and finally is explaining that a boxing match is not entertaining when it ends in one punch. And that he needs to do better. And yeah.
Archie has like a whole
Oh.
conversation with an hallucination of
I
Fred
forgot about those.
about like he's like conflicted on the ethics of fighting other, which is funny because he didn't seem conflicted when he was just like knocking the guy out in two punches,
Yeah.
but something about like having to like make the pain prolong, like prolonging the fight for himself and the other guy. Like, he's very conflicted about it. And Fred hallucination of Fred, I should say. Fred hopefully would not give this advice, is basically just like, yeah. What does he say? Like,
He's like,
when you were a kid, you got into a bunch of fights, and the teacher said by junior high, he's gonna know how
no.
to take a punch and give one. Which, what kind of elementary school teacher about a clearly violent kid is like, the theme is he's gonna be violent forever and there's nothing you can do. It's his personality.
No. He's like, well, on the bright side, he's gonna be able to knock the shit out of people. Like, what?
And Fred was like, you always got into fights, usually protecting someone else. I'm like, I want to know the elementary school situation where Archie
No.
had to physically fight another child because, like, that child was bullying some other kid. Like, get a teacher. Come on. How did you raise this kid?
It's just so. Anyways, then Alice and Betty are talking in Betty's room. Because Betty's getting ready to go to the speakeasy opening, and Alice calls her out for not actually wanting to join the farm and wanting to just talk to Edgar. Which, like, obviously. And then Betty's like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. But, like, can I. Why are you telling the farm all of this shit? They're gonna have blackmail not only on you now, but then like me and Jughead and FP and all of these people. And Alice is like, well, the farm would never use this information against me. Which, okay, girl,
Alice, I
sure.
know this is just overall a tough season for the Alice stans, and I don't want to rub salt into the wound, but
We are in the trenches, for real, for real.
Betty makes a good point of like, you're literally implicating me. Like,
Yeah.
if this ever came out, I could go to jail, which is a good point. Like, that's a fair concern for Betty to have, and Alice is just like, well, they wouldn't do that.
They wouldn't do
Betty,
that
calm
to you.
down.
They wouldn't do that.
So Betty asks her about G&G, and Alice doesn't want to talk about it. And Betty's like, how could you tell them but not me? And Alice says, I trust them more than you.
It's so fucked up to say to your daughter, but honestly, she kind of ate Betty up in that moment.
She doesn't say it with an ounce of like hesitation or remorse. She's
No.
just like straight up, well, I trust them more than you.
I straight up, you're an untrustworthy person, Betty. It was so funny. So then people arrive at Pops for opening night. And Cheryl and Tony to skip the line, yada yada yada. Cheryl posts the cringiest Insta story of all time, congratulating Veronica on the opening. Like, I don't, it was so embarrassing to look at.
I, of course, took a picture.
Yay.
It is a picture of Veronica smizing directly into the camera that presumably Cheryl took. She added confetti GIF effect on the top, a yes sticker to the side of Veronica on Veronica's body. It says, congrats, B, exclamation point, stoked on the grand opening, period. Boss lady, exclamation point. There's a heart symbol and then the hashtag kind comments.
I don't.
I don't know what that means, but
I
it's
guess it's
clearly
because
actually
I'm
an Instagram
assuming
story.
Cheryl's Instagram story is usually a place to be hateful, and she has to warn people that this is not one of those times. But
There's also plenty of fashion sleighs going on in the moment. Cheryl's, of course, in a sparkly red dress, that's giving cleave. Tony is in a black sleeveless dress. Jughead and Betty also show up, and Jughead is in the like classic emo boy has to dress up nice outfit. Why is this a trope? But it definitely is, where it's literally all black, like just like black pants, black dress shirt, and a skinny black tie. And I, the only thing about Betty, I said, Betty looks 12. was not impressed.
No, I think my favorite of them all was Cheryl's, if we're being honest here.
Yeah.
Anyways, then Reggie tells Veronica that they have a problem outside, and it turns out the problem is that Daddy's here.
There's no problem. That's never a problem.
So he's shown up to, make this episode more fun and interesting as usual. And so he brought Veronica's portrait that normally hangs in his study to hang it in the speakeasy. And he's like, "I'm here to congratulate you." And Veronica's like, "Okay, thanks." And invites him downstairs and says, "I'm glad you came, Dottie. If only so you can see how a legitimate business is run." And like, she thought she ate.
Didn't eat though. Like, honestly, this one, I was like, I felt bad. Okay, maybe I just thought she ate. She also looks good. She is wearing like a purple dress, and her lipstick matches it, which I thought was impressive. And we also see Josie back downstairs. We see Josie doing her first performance, and she is wearing a sleigh green and black dress with like a little piece that goes around the neck, but it's actually like a crop top and a long skirt number.
It is
And she is singing.
so good.
What I could only describe as a slightly R&B cover of Anything Goes by
See,
Cole
the
Porter.
way I described it is a Bond theme-esque cover of Anything Goes.
It's
I
somewhere
don't.
in the middle.
It's somewhere in between those two. And I think the reason my mind went to Bond theme is because as soon as she starts performing, these two curtains rise behind her and they're like colored panes of like shadow puppet people dancing behind them, which felt like a Bond intro.
Yes, it was like she's like sensually, she's not even like really dancing, but just kind of like touching herself. Self, not in a weird way, but like just kind of like feeling herself. Like it's like a sensual vibe, which
Yes.
is weird, obviously. But I just felt like it was like the sexiness of that song was definitely ramped up to a 10. Where the words are, honestly, I'm like never really paid attention to the lyrics here. They're all about sex, but
Yeah, that's
just
the point of the
no
song.
one. No one says it in like, or no one performs it in a slow down, sensual, performance, backlit performance. I've just never seen that before.
Me neither. And honestly, I do, as much as it was fun, I do think the song was written and intended and best performed as the most musical theater thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, can't lie.
It worked how it was written.
It wasn't written for this. It was
It was
not.
not
This
written for
is
that.
a Riverdale original. So anyway, we're back at the Fight Club, and Archie is fighting once again, which I'm like, I love how time does not exist in this story. Because like, is it the next day
How
and he's
often
back
is
in the
Fight
ring?
Club?
I'm just like, Archie's gonna die doing this, but okay. He's fighting this different kid, and he's kind of like, the other kid is clearly scared, and he's like, hit me, hit me. And trying to actually make it a performance.
This other kid also sucks if Archie has to be like, "Hey, punch me in this boxing match that I'm just standing here during."
This kid did look like a kid. Like, I think they
Yeah.
casted like a 16-year-old for this, so. He was no physical match for KJ Apa, so I could see that if this was actually happening, his first instinct would probably not to be like, I'm gonna go on the offensive and
That's true.
take him down. But Archie puts on a nice little show, and I said Archie is good at faking it actually. Give him a prompt and he can do it. But then of course, he does knock out the dude though. But after after enough time, and the warden, I love this moment. It's just like, that kid is a star. Which I'm like, wow, we had 5 minutes without Archie having like a homoerotic older man in his life, and it's like, we are so back, baby.
We are so back. Anyways, then Archie gets back to his cell after this, and it's full of Mad Dog's old stuff, which he gets as the new champ of the fighting ring. And then the warden gives him a bottle of rum as like a celebratory thing, and it's like, we're just getting started, kid. And Archie gets upset and has a flashback to Hiram Lodge getting him thrown in prison, which, like, kind of isn't like it obviously it is just, like, ultimately
Okay, but
Hiram started this, but Archie chose to go to prison, and I think we all forget that.
yes, but the rum is Lodge rum.
Oh, see, I didn't notice that.
So he knows. No, that was like the reveal. Like, Hiram is obviously Hiram's doing it
Well,
because
yeah,
Hiram's
obviously
doing
Hiram's doing
everything.
this.
But it's like the rum he got was, it said on the bottle, Lodge rum. So Archie sees it, realizes this, all the hell he's going through right now is also Hiram's thought. Then he has the flashback to the fact that he's only here in the first place because of Hiram, which he doesn't volunteer to go, but Hiram is also the one that framed him. So,
Yeah,
like,
Hiram framed it for murder.
Archie's still a victim here.
No, I
He's
wasn't saying he
dumb.
wasn't.
Yeah, no, he's dumb, but he's still the victim, and he gets really mad, and he throws the bottle of rum outside of, like, the prison, the door to his cell, and destroys all of the shit. It's
Yeah.
crazy. But then he picks up a book and, like, just in the middle of this, he picks up a book and it has a little pickaxe in it, which I'm like, these motherfucking guards didn't even comb through the stuff to see if there was like a weapon or anything like that. Of
Do
course they
we
didn't.
ever find out what happened to Mad Dog? I don't remember.
Yes, we
Oh, yes.
do.
Oh, yeah, we do. Because he shows up later, if I
Yes.
remember correctly, at different locations.
I don't actually know how he got out of the situation. I don't remember that. I do just remember him doing other stuff later. So we must get
Yeah.
some sort of explanation.
Anyways, yeah. Then Jughead and Betty are back at, get back to the trailer with the manual for G&G. Or they get back from the party, and Alice and FP confront them with the manual. And are like clearly very upset that they have this. And Betty's like, Jughead, don't tell them anything, and this will they tell us what they know. Which I'm like, go off, Queen. Leverage.
Leverage, she's smart, but FP is smarter and just throws the fucking thing into the fire. Okay, my thing with Alice and FP. They literally say at the beginning of this episode, we know that Betty and Jughead are going to investigate this,
Yeah.
right? They say that. FP in this scene gets really mad and is like, are you playing the game? Jughead says no. FP's like, I see the blue on your lips. Don't lie to me. Like, you are. Why not give them some sort of additional information that would encourage them not to play the game?
Yeah.
You know that they are going to investigate it. The likelihood that they end up playing the game in the next 24 hours is high enough that you kind of just have to reveal your cards at this point and tell them, like, give them something that would actually scare them. Because, like, it's so clear that Alice and FP are genuinely terrified of their children playing this game. That's true. To convince them, or to at least, like, give an argument of why they shouldn't investigate this, you have to tell them something. Like, I really just did not understand this move of, like, breaking out to the extent, throwing the, like, burning the thing, I guess, helps, but it's like, you know, Jughead already played.
Yeah.
He almost died. He has blue on his lips, and, like, FP was concerned, but, like, not as concerned as I would be if my son just took a 50-50 chance at suicide today. Like, I feel like I would ask some additional questions.
I would too.
But
Whatever.
it doesn't fit the plot, so you know.
Then Veronica's getting ready for bed, and Hiram comes in and congratulates her. And Veronica's like, "So I guess you probably moved to the drug lab." And he's like, "What drug lab?"
Was
King.
cute.
King. I was like, this is a fun father-daughter moment. I love their quirky relationship.
Cute. Then Archie. This is so stupid. Archie at prison is like, guys, whatever, we're escaping.
He walks out and is like, guys, I found a hammer in Mad Dog's stuff. And I think he kept it as a reminder that there is an outside world that we are outside of, but we can still be a part of. And I was like, I don't think that's the reason, Archie. I don't think that's the reason.
Also, he finds this tiny pickaxe. This is not even a full-size pickaxe, which also would not actually help you escape prison. Like,
No.
sorry. Like, not to be that guy. But he finds a miniature pickaxe and is like, guys, we're escaping. And Joaquin is like, I'm
I'm
in.
in.
It's like, you can't just say I'm into escaping prison. He doesn't have an actual plan. This was just like, okay, Archie. Yeah, sure, you're escaping.
You're in. Then Betty and Jughead are cuddling in the bunker yet again and discussing things. And Jughead is like, maybe burning the rule book was for the best because when I was reading it, it felt like I was reading pure evil. Which, okay.
Whatever the fuck that means.
That means. And then Betty is just like kind of ignoring him. It's like, I think our parents must have played this game.
Geniuses.
I was like, oh my God.
Remember last at the end of last season when Betty was like, everyone thinks I'm a great investigator and I couldn't even tell it was my own dad. I'm like, girl, nobody thinks you're a good
Great
investigator.
investigator. They
Nobody
just
thought
make
that.
fun of you because you think you're a great investigator.
But
Name
then they're
teacher
like,
was not a
well,
compliment. It's not a complimentary nickname, Betty, and I need you to know that.
no. And then they're like, well, it's over now, which immediate cut to the G&G scripture is in every single locker at the school. So it's not over. And in the like word to the Jughead voiceover, and he's like, by next week, everyone in the school will be playing Griffins and Gargoyles. And then we cut to an insane moment of Ethel in the hospital being like, I did it. I spread your gospel. And she's talking to a literal gargoyle king, like the one we saw earlier, and that's the end of the episode.
I just, is she hallucinating? It's so unclear to me, but like,
That's the obvious issue with the scene. But the deeper issue, how
how
did
did
she
she get it in everyone's
spread it?
lockers?
She's on
She's in a
suicide
hospital.
watch in a hospital. How did
Yes.
she print out 100 pamphlets? Like, this is a full-size pamphlet. She printed all of that, put it in people's lockers. Like, did this the night before? Like, before she met Jughead and somehow knew all of this was gonna happen?
Like, I don't understand. Also, what was the whole thing with like Jughead, you're gonna spread the gospel? And then she did this anyways, because she like had no faith in him actually. Like, I don't.
I can't remember if she's the one that actually did it or like if
I
we
mean, I don't think so.
understand. Yeah, like there has to be more to learn here. I don't know. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, well, I have future comments, but I feel like those are for future episodes of like what happens with Jughead in this plot line.
Oh,
But
yeah.
overall ethical ethical
Ethical Ethel.
ethical Ethel. I was trying to say Ethel and mental illness at the same time, so I was like, wow, Ethel is mentally ill.
Yeah.
And also, why does everyone in the school start playing the game?
Because they got a manual in their locker. Like, I'm sorry, Cheryl would not start playing this game because someone left a like instruction manual in her locker.
Yeah. Anyway, overall, this
Whatever.
episode, not the greatest. I feel like they're just. The thing is with the season, I do feel like they close it up pretty good.
Yeah, I
But
would
they
agree.
open up so much shit at the beginning that it's just like we're just opening stuff at this point. And there's no resolution to any of these things for a bit. So that's just where we're at.
Yeah, it's a long journey in season three. A very, very long journey.
What was your outfit of the episode?
Okay, I think my outfit of the episode, because I don't want to be basic and say one of the like opening night at Le Bon Nuit gowns, because like I feel like that's just kind of a given that they're all really slay and wonderful. And so I think I'm gonna go with Evelyn's like 70s scarf moment.
Play. I was thinking that too. I'm also not gonna be basic, and I'm going to then say Ethel as Princess Etheline with the cute little crown and the cute little cape, as she tries to kill herself. Greatest show on television, everyone. What was your quote?
My quote of the episode was, sorry, Betty, but you'll never be worthy, no matter how hard you try.
The homophobia. It's the homophobia for me. What was this? I'm so curious. I don't remember anything about Betty in this game that I'm like, does she ever play it? Like, what's happening? So that's what I'm most curious for.
Me too. Well, I remember vaguely something about Betty in this game. I don't know how she gets to this point, but Betty, in the very iconic scene involving Betty and Griffins and Gargoyles.
Oh, well, she's not playing it though.
No.
Oh my God, that happens in this season too.
Yes!
Y'all, we are in for a wild ride. That makes so much sense with all the Ethel stuff. Oh my gosh. Okay, folks.
I don't know how we get to that point, but we do. I forget the journey to that point, but I remember it vividly.
Okay,
There's so much still to happen in this season. Like, so much.
this is only the third episode, and Archie is currently trying to break out of juvie.
True. Archie is in juvie. So he has such a journey to go on.
Wait, okay, I'm looking back. We're back up on the hype of the season.
Season three is so good.
The best is yet to come. Okay, my quote of the episode is maybe an unusual one because I feel like we are a Jughead-hating podcast, but I have to go with Jughead pulling the moves on Ethel and saying, "Please, Princess Etheline." Life.
Jughead.
Oh, Jughead. Okay. Who should
Okay.
we do for Kinsey's scale?
I don't know. Have we done Ethel yet?
I don't think so. Let me check. No.
She is a big part in this episode.
The little Ethel. Ethel.
Her
What
little
to say
Princess
about this?
Etheline moments.
Okay, so we're doing Kinsey's scale, which is the heterosexuality to homosexuality scale. We are doing Miss Ethel Muggs. Okay. I have my answer.
I have mine too.
One, two, three.
Okay.
I said zero. Evan said one.
I almost said zero and at the last minute changed my mind.
Let me tell you why she's a zero. She hangs out with the G&G kids. She is a theater nerd. She is a loser. She can't get a boyfriend. She wants more than anything to have some homosexual, some homosexual tendencies, but she has none. She is 100% that straight girl that's like, I wish I was gay. Like, but she wishes she's a gay guy. You know what I mean? Like, she is reading Dan and Phil fan fiction. Like,
Yeah.
she is dating, not even dating, pretending to date gay guy Ben, who's actually dating Dilton and has no
Yeah.
idea what's going on. She is the most oblivious straight girl ever, and I think she's a zero.
Those are all valid points. I was along the same lines generally. The only reason I went from a last minute change from zero to one was because I took a step back. I took a moment for myself. And I said, Griffin and Gargoyles is Dungeons and Dragons. And you know what Dungeons and Dragons is at base. It is for weirdos. It is for the odd people in the world. And so I don't know that Ethel is like mainstream gay. I think she would identify as queer. But like, not actually. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. No, I feel like she could be either of those things where like we both agree she wants to be gay,
Yeah.
but she's not really. And it's like
Yes.
she's either so oblivious and like makes obnoxious comments to actual gay people, or is like, no, like I'm a little fruity. Like modern day Ethel would be like, she would like claim to be fruity on TikTok, and it would
Yes.
get zero views and zero likes. Like she would be doing it for no audience.
She would 100% be like, I don't paint my nails. I'm queer. Defying gender expectations.
Hate me. Wow. We are the best podcast around, and I'll tell you this, because my nails completely unpainted. Obviously, Evan's painted very nicely in green and yellow. Every other, those look nice.
Thank you. They are the school colors of my college.
Go Bucks. That's how
And I needed to remind myself that I liked it. So.
Anything else?
I don't think so. Other than just like, we talked a lot at the beginning. I feel like it's just everyone's plot is in a weird point right now because it was like most episodes, at least someone has like fun shenanigans happening in their plot line, but the episode was just like very everyone was in like a transitionary state in their plot lines, and because everyone is doing their own thing at all times, like it's not really like you get those fun moments of like having characters realize how insane other people's plot lines are being at the moment. So you didn't get that even in those like weird transitionary moments.
Yeah, I will say what I'm excited for, things that this episode set up that I'm excited for. One, Veronica and Reggie. Like, I like that Reggie
Yes.
is just like her bitch at this point and just kind of does whatever she says. Like, I feel like that's a fun dynamic that continues throughout like the rest of the show. And it
Yeah.
wasn't a thing before, so I'm excited for that. And Archie's Fight Club.
Archie's Fight Club.
Specifically, the Hiram intersections, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. I'm excited for the G&G developments to slowly infect every plot line. It's fun to see those interact with the other characters' issues. What else? Oh, I'm excited for the next episode because it's a fun one. I'm very excited.
Oh, I didn't even check. Okay, now I'm excited too. Okay, we will see you all next week. And remember,
It
it
gets
gets
better.
better. Nailed it.
You can reach out to us, let us know what your thoughts are on the episode. We'd love to hear from you. Hear what your favorite iconic fits of the episode or your favorite quotes of the episode are. You can reach out to us at Cheryl's B Words at gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at Cheryl's Bitches, or find us on Instagram at Cheryl's Bitches and TikTok at Cheryl's Bitches as well. So that is Cheryl's B Words at gmail.com if you want to send us an email, and Cheryl's Bitches on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Check us out, please.